live from the Quad Cities with Morgan Otier and Kyle Keel. This is Quad Cities Live.
Today on QCL, a behind-the-scenes look at conservation efforts involving one of the newest animal exhibits at Nairobi Zoo, the African painted dog.
And we hope you like a good mystery. We're talking about our latest read in the QCL Book Club, how you can join the group just in time for our May Book of the Month.
And later, have you ever seen an infant learn to float and swim before they learn to walk? Well, we sit down with a certified survival swim instructor to learn about the benefits of ISR lessons.
It is Monday, May 6th, and you're watching Quad Cities Live. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Morgan Otier.
I'm Kyle Keel. Well, it's a Mother's Day tradition all across the Quad Cities. The 2024 Beaux Arts Fair is set for this weekend at the Mississippi Valley Fairgrounds in Davenport. Yeah. And joining us today is one of the artists who is taking part in this year's event. It's Cindy Pippert. Cindy, thank you so much for coming on Quad Cities Live today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, Cindy, you have been part of the Beaux Arts Committee for a very long time.
A long time.
Yeah. A very long time now. Tell us a little bit about the Beaux Arts organization and what the goal is among you guys.
We are a nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
And so, many moons ago, a few artists got together and they started doing this back in 1953. So we're celebrating our 71st year.
Wow.
And so the artists that are invited, it's a juried show, so they've got to send in pictures, and then we have a committee that judges. So the ones that get in, and when they're paying these fees that we have, after we take off our expenses, like advertising, mm-hmm. you know, whatnot, security, whatever, what's left, we donate to the Figgy, and we do That's that every awesome. Year. And that is for that we want them to spend it on education.
Yeah.
Don't spend it on your toilet paper electricity bill. We want you to, you know, get children interested in the arts and have, once in a while, we'll, if they've got a big exhibit coming that's just really fascinating and costs a lot of money, we might switch and say, okay, toss that toward the whatever. But that's kind of what it is, promoting the arts.
Yeah, that's great. And we know from our talks with the Figgy, you know, over the last few months, they definitely put any funding to good use as far as education is concerned. They do a great job over there. So in 2019, I believe that is correct, the Beaux Arts Fair, at least the spring edition, moved to the Mississippi Valley Fairgrounds there in Davenport. This has been really a good move in the sense that it's really popular.
It is. It's the artists like it. It's very easy for us to load and unload.
Yeah.
And the crowds that come, they enjoy it. And it's big, you know, huge area.
Yeah.
It is.
And so it's a nice layout. We've kind of got a loop, like where the big Hereford cow is.
Mm-hmm.
We're just south of that.
I know the one. I know the cow.
Yeah. So we're just south. There's a big, it's almost like a racetrack, loop. And so we're on the outer edge as well as the inside edge.
That's perfect.
Yeah. So it's big, and we're very generous with our space for the artists. We call it a 10 by 10 booth, but it's really 12 by 12.
Yeah.
So that's you got to have room to walk between your tent and the person next to you.
And for customers, you know, things like that, yeah.
I mean, we were reading 8,000 people come to the Beaux Arts Fair, at least in the spring, and then obviously we have the fall toward the Figgy, but you definitely have more of that space, up to 100 vendors or so.
We've got over 70.
70 this year? Okay.
You know, when COVID came through, it kind of messed up a lot of things.
Sure. You guys aren't the only ones, right?
Right.
We're getting back.
Right. We're getting back on level ground.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be a fabulous weekend. We're seeing some photos right now of vendors in the past. Of course, they will be coming back. I'm sure many of them enjoy coming to this event every year. You also brought some stuff for us to check out today.
Bring some stuff.
Let's start with you.
Oh, okay.
Right. What you create is absolutely beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Weave these rugs.
This is what you'd call a rag rug. It's just clothes, and I cut them apart and I shred the cloth into strips, so end for end, and then I weave it. And it takes 5 hours to set up the loom.
Wow. That's amazing.
And then to do this, and I can do them, this one's got fringe, I can do them without.
Mm-hmm.
And then these little pieces here are just kind of to show you some of the different patterns you can do, but I call them mug rugs or dollhouse rugs. Little girls love them for their dollhouses.
Yes, they absolutely
would. Little boys
crook
their little Hot Wheels cars on them.
Mine uses like Kleenex tissues for blankets for her Barbie, so this
would
be an upgrade for sure.
So obviously very different mediums of art. We've got pottery here on this end.
Pottery, that's Val Newman. She's been coming to the show for years. Mm-hmm. Her work is microwave safe and...
Oh, nice. Little salt and pepper shakers. I just noticed.
There's actually salt and pepper in there.
Well, hey, there you go. Pepper.
At least you know it works.
It works. It looks beautiful and it works.
See, microwave safe and...
I love that. The other.
And then right next to it, we've got beautiful photography by a local photographer. I mean, this is incredible stuff.
That is Jeff Ignacia. It's very hard to pronounce his name. Yeah, but he does beautiful work.
Ignatius, yeah.
This one on the end where you're looking at, the moon in that picture is during an eclipse. He's trying to get involved with some astrophotography.
Oh, yeah.
That is incredibly
beautiful.
One
is...
It's like over the...
The next one is fireworks, and that, you know, to get the perfect shot so they're not all fuzzed out. He did great. And then he also does some close-up work, nature scenes.
Have you ever tried to take a picture of fireworks?
Yes, I have.
Don't even bother.
No, don't bother.
Just call Jeff if you want a picture.
Doesn't turn out as good on my cell phone.
No, not at all. It really is truly incredible photography. Yeah. Beautiful. And then some more art down here.
We've got some more art here. This here is a print, and her name is Hannah Gebhardt. But what you do is you carve this image where the white is. Carve that away. And I don't know if she's using tile or wood or what.
Okay. Yeah.
And then when you get that all carved away, you put ink on it.
Oh,
put
wow.
your paper on there and have a
very
rolling
detailed.
Thing over
oh,
it. Like
yeah.
a rolling pin. That's not the right term.
Yeah.
And so you get your print. So it's kind of like an opposite. And this one, she's added color.
Yes,
it's
beautiful, and it really goes to show you the different types of art that you can find at the Beaux Arts Fair. We cannot forget about this beautiful work of art here on the end.
That is from Tom Hempel.
Yeah.
He does beautiful watercolors. That one is called Lobster Shacks.
I like the name.
Yeah.
And he's been a longtime artist. He's had his work in several restaurants around the Quad Cities and has exhibited, you know, a lot. So he's pretty well known around these parts.
And we have another one on the end
The one on the end is an oil painting from Pat Helverson.
Wow.
And she's been doing a lot of nice landscape works. She does smaller pieces like with flowers and still lifes, but
that is something to keep in mind too. A lot of artists that you will meet somewhere like the Beaux Arts Fair, you can like get their contact information oftentimes and commission something for for yourself or for a gift for a loved one. That is also a really unique and special part about this fair is you make a lot of connections and you meet a lot of really great people.
You do, and we have artists from several states that come through.
Yeah.
And the artists that start doing get on the circuit.
Around.
Oh, we make friends. You know, we've got friends from 20 years ago.
All about networking.
There's still artists doing the show. I mean, clear back 30. Well, the show's 71 years old. So in the early days, we were on the hill behind what's now the museum.
But
it was the municipal art gallery. And I was a little kid taking my art classes there.
That's awesome, though. Extra special meaning as we head into Mother's Day.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think that's a big draw for a lot of people is Mother's Day. They go with Mom to the Beaux Arts Fair. And if you want to do that, the Beaux Arts Fair is this weekend from 10 to 5 on May 11th and from 10 to 4 there on May 12th at the Mississippi Valley Fairgrounds. For more information, you can head to beauxartsfair.com. Cindy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up on Quad Cities Live, taking a closer look at one of Niabe Zoo's newest exhibits, the African painted dog, and the conservation work happening behind the scenes. That's next.
You're watching Quad Cities Live.
Niabe Zoo is open for the summer season, and the zoo is doing what it can to help us all learn about the animals that live there. Joel Vanderbush from Niabe Zoo and Dr. Greg Rasmussen from Painted Dog Research Trust, they are both here with me today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
Well, we have lots to talk about. Joel, you were just here not so long ago talking about the opening of the zoo, and we had mentioned the conservation speaker series, which is what we're really highlighting today. But before we get to that, Painted Canada Dogs moved into Niobe for the first time last year.
Yep.
So Joel, how are they doing? How's that exhibit been going?
It's going very, very well. You know, for us to bring Painted Dogs to the zoo, we knew that we wanted to learn more about what their requirements were in the wild before we ever tried to create a habitat here. And so we figured we would talk to the world's foremost authority on African Painted Dogs, Dr. Greg Rasmussen. And so he's, you know, here on his national tour, and we brought him in to talk more about Painted Dogs to our community.
It's very exciting. Niobe and Painted Dog Research, they have been working together for a very long time, Joel specifically. So Joel, before we get into, you know, what Dr. Rasmussen's going to be talking about, just kind of tell us about the partnership and how that came about.
Sure, yeah. We met at a conservation conference in 2018. Next week, actually, we are going back to that same conservation conference. We'll both be speaking at that conference in front of an international audience.
Oh, wow.
So that's a really great opportunity for Niobe Zoo to talk about the conservation work that we've been doing in front of a huge audience. And so that really started that relationship, and really the conservation speaker series, Dr. Greg was one of the very first to speak in that series back in 2018. And that's how it really kicked off. And ever since then, you know, we've been continuing to find ways to support each other and, you know, ways that we as an organization with certain expertise can help them out in the field. Yeah. Everything from developing websites to building conservation education programs for them.
Very cool. Well, Joel actually took a trip to Zimbabwe.
Yes.
And so we're going to talk to Joel about his experience in just a minute. But why is it so important, do you think, for somebody who's interested in conservation or wants to continue to further any message to experience that firsthand?
Because, well, first of all, conservation is our own survival, if we're honest. You know, we've really got to wake up and realize that we don't look after nature. We're building ourselves into, digging ourselves into a big hole. And why is it so, that's why it's so important. I've been doing it for 36 years, the Painted Dog, and it's also important to get children involved, educate, share, solve a problem for a species. And the Painted Dog's down to less than 6,000 in the world. And there were a million, so.
Wow.
Like the wolf, they've been persecuted. And I just felt 36 years ago I could do something about it.
Yeah.
There's now 800 in Zimbabwe, so.
Yeah.
And there were 200.
Okay, well, good for you. So, Joel, you visited with Greg's team there.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the different things that you did while you were there, because, honestly, what an exciting adventure.
Well, yeah, certainly, you know, and part of that was, of course, going into the African bush and tracking painted dogs and being able to set camera traps and, you know, retrieve some of the camera data from there so we could evaluate that. But the biggest reason that we had gone was to build this bush camp for them. We, of course, run zoo camps at Niobe Zoo, and knowing the power of education in our community, Dr. Rick and I talked about that for a number of years, and so being able to go there, we were able to help his conservation education team really develop that process of how do you formulate a camp, how do you plan it, what kind of lesson plans do you write down, and what standard operating procedures do you use, and to train that team. And so we were able to kick off the first bush camp there, and now they're running two bush camps a month with funding from Jane Goodall, so it's pretty great.
Fabulous. And you talked about the cameras. So, Greg, for Painted Dog Conservation, the camera traps, they're motion activated. Kind of explain for folks who are watching right now.
Okay, so
how that helps.
A camera trap obviously doesn't trap an animal if
you take
a picture. And so the whole idea, my study area is about the size of Delaware. So we have to set camera traps everywhere.
Oh, wow.
And each pack of dogs got a territory of about 400 square miles. So, you know, you can't just be out there driving around in circles. And so we set camera traps. But we don't just collect data on painted dogs. We collect data on all species. And also we collect data on poachers and miscreants that shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. And that's people.
Okay.
And hand that information in. So it's a whole constant monitoring. In wildlife, people don't realize we have to constantly be monitoring the wildlife. Is it still there? Was it there 10 years ago? Was it there 5 years ago? No good to say, oh, I'm here and there's a painted dog and tomorrow you think you've done your job.
Mm-mm. Okay. And you'll be speaking, again, Niobe hosts this conservation speaker series. You will be speaking tomorrow night at this event. Can you give folks a little bit of a preview of the things that you plan to talk about, just some highlights?
Well, obviously I'll be talking about the amazing social nature of the panda dogs, which is unique. They're actually more social than we are. And there's no, in a species, you've got no fighting. I'm also going to talk about my program about getting women into education and more seriously getting them from middle school right through to university and beyond.
Yeah.
And empowering young women in conservation. We need women in conservation. I'm passionate about that.
Well, I love that. And before we run out of time, we want to speak about the props that you brought with you today.
He's got that one. I've got this one.
And these are things that people can purchase, and they are beautiful.
Absolutely. When we talk about the work that he's doing in the field, you know, one of the reasons he's on this U.S. tour is to fundraise. Mm-hmm. You know, he comes 3 months out of every year to go to different zoos around the country to help raise money to support the work that he's doing. And these are some of the ways that you can do this. So this piece here is a snare art piece. Obviously, it's shaped like a painted dog. We have some that are shaped like rhinos and other things. But snare wire is the wire that's used to poach animals in the wild.
Goodness.
And so they work with anti-poaching teams that go out and collect this wire, get it out of that mix, and so local artisans then convert it into this wire, or into this art. We bring it here to the U.S., we sell it in zoo gift shops, and that funding helps to support the work that they're doing.
Amazing.
And the same goes with this lovely little
My little felty is okay. It's made of wool, but the main thing is cute, isn't it?
He's very cute.
Very cute. Come on, camera, take a picture.
Yeah, there you go.
Gotta hold it still.
Hold it still.
It is very cute.
So the program of this is specifically for young girls that are taken out of school because they're girls. Unfortunately, girls in rural areas don't get denied an education.
Okay.
Based on gender, so
proceeds will benefit what you were just talking about, which is getting them through.
Yeah, the whole thing is to get them through that period where they've got an income and they can have some independence.
Yeah.
And so that develops a skill to help them through that process.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And so the funding also supports that.
Fantastic. Well, here's all the information if you're watching right now. Dr. Greg Rasmussen will speak at Niabe Zoo tomorrow, May 7th at 6:30 p.m. in the Discovery Center. They do ask for a donation of $8 for members and $10 for non-members. Again, that donation will go to the Niabe Conservation Fund. And they are asking that you do register ahead of time at niabezoo.com. Just click on the event calendar. Thank you both for chatting with me today and being here.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you. Up next, Quad Cities company that makes the tiny pieces that hold big things together. More on Dharmic Designs and what they do next on Quad Cities Live.
You're watching Quad Cities Live.
Well, just one of the reasons we love this show is we have the privilege to tell you about the things made right here in the Quad Cities, things that you may never think about but are so important, not just for our community, but for communities around the globe. Tom and Grace McCubbin are here from Dharmic Designs. Both of you, welcome. We're so excited to talk with you today.
Thank you.
Yes, we are looking forward to this. Here. Yes, so Tom, the company makes small metal components.
Yes.
And you are actually one of the only companies that makes these types of things in the United States.
Some of them?
No, not exactly. Not the only one, and sorry to direct that away from Tom, but I feel like I answered this a little better. Mm-hmm. We make a lot of stuff they also make
in the overseas,
but we're offering it at competitive prices.
Here, yes.
So things that people are like sending overseas normally to get made they're just not, it's not cost effective to make them here.
Yeah.
Because what's happened in manufacturing, and especially since COVID, you know, the workforce has changed.
Yeah.
Right? People are having a hard time fulfilling the jobs that they have, and manufacturing is streamlining to the point where OEMs are making the main components of their devices, mm-hmm. but all these little things that make up everything that we use have to come from somewhere. And because these are difficult to produce in America because they don't cost very much.
Yeah.
And so there's not a lot of profit margin in them. And the traditional method of machining them involves a lot of operator intervention.
Okay.
So that's why they're getting pushed away. Our processes, we're able to manufacture these at competitive prices with overseas. Exactly. So we're able to bring some of that manufacturing back to America. I'm not sure if other people are doing it, but we know that they're not doing it at the
level that you guys are doing it at.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Okay. So, Tom, you are an engineer. So describe what you make.
All kinds of stuff out of metal. So just about anything that has to have some sort of weight or load to it generally has some sort of metal components in it. Sometimes they're for show, sometimes they're structural, sometimes it's just to hold things together, you know?
Yeah, if you think about the components of life in general, almost everything has metal. Your cabinets have metal hinges.
Sure.
Every time that construction companies build homes and they have screws and nuts and bolts, you'd think that it would be cheaper to, you know, order those, you know, off the shelf. But some of our processes we've developed, companies can get custom screws for similar pricing.
Really? Mm-hmm. Amazing. Okay, so talk a little bit about the items that you guys brought here onto display today, and just describe them for us. These are all items that you guys can make.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is just kind of a mishmash of different things we've made. This one is a watch case for an old-time kind of pocket watch.
Okay.
It's kind of converted into a wristwatch. Had somebody that was interested in that, so we made some cases for them.
Very nice, yeah.
This is just a compressed air fitting nozzle for
all sorts of applications.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like filling a car tire or something like that.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
This is a gas burner nozzle, so it's, you know, something like a supersized grill sort of thing.
Right.
For heating for industrial applications. This is a little thing that holds a thermocouple for molds, for mold making applications.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys really do run the gamut.
We do, and we are a custom shop, so essentially whatever a manufacturer needs, we can make it. If they have a print or a model, great, but if not, we can reverse engineer just about anything.
That is super interesting. Talk a little bit about your customer base and who the types of folks that are reaching out to you.
Yeah, so when we talk about the customers that we're working with, OEMs, right? Manufacturers who are making something.
Yeah.
So we think about like Hoover vacuums, right? They're making most of that vacuum, don't get me wrong. But there's gonna be all kinds of little brackets and pieces and nuts and bolts that they're gonna buy from other people. So that's the kind of customer base that we have, is manufacturers who are making something and selling it and need partners to provide them with low-cost metal components to allow them to increase their margins.
Yeah.
But another thing we wanna make sure we shout out is, not only can we offer build components, but we're willing to come into manufacturers and teach them how to do what we do.
Oh, wow, that's
so
huge.
So if they want to do it in-house themselves and bring that in, we
can come
in.
That's a service you provide.
Exactly.
Wow.
We call it turnkey that actually opens doors.
I like it. Okay, and again, you guys are actually having a ribbon cutting at the new administrative office. That is coming up at the end of the month, so that is on May 30th from 4 to 6 p.m. So is this something that folks can go to if they want to learn a little bit more?
Absolutely. We're located at 1520 6th Avenue in downtown Moline.
Perfect.
It's we'd love to have you and meet the community.
Wonderful. And of course, if anybody's interested in contacting Dharmic Designs, you can visit their website, dharmicdesigns.com. Tom and Grace, thank you so much for coming here today and just explaining what you do for all of us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for having us.
Well, much more to come in our next half hour of QCL, including our monthly meeting of the TV6 Book Club. We'll discuss our April book and unveil what's next for May. And later, teaching survival swim techniques to children, even babies. We'll sit down with a certified instructor to learn more about the important lessons learned in the water. Well, it is time now for our wins of the weekend, where we talk about something cool that happened over the weekend. Kyle, do you have one?
I do, yeah. So Saturday, we just kind of decided to lay low, and we headed over to my grandparents' house. And my grandma likes to go to estate sales, and so she found, well, right there, they're doing some chalk. That's my kids, Carson and Chandler. But she found this, like, very much used big wheel that Chandler and Carson were playing with, along with his little horse. So Carson was trying to learn how to pedal it. He's been asking for a bike here lately.
Yeah.
So, and then he hears the motorcycles go across the roadway, and he's like, motor bicycle. So
that is cute.
We spent the afternoon visiting my grandparents. It's always great to get some quality
time. That's like
with
a
them.
Ton of wins in one
hand.
Yeah. And it's hard for them to get used to that pedaling motion.
Yeah.
So, like, this earlier, the better.
After that video, he kind of got the hang of it. So we'll get more practice in. So what's your win?
Mine is also all encompassing.
Yeah.
So I got the opportunity to MC the Blossoms and Brunch event for Friends of Trinity Foundation. kitchen, and it was an absolutely fabulous morning. Got to meet and see a lot of great folks that watch TV6.
Yeah.
And it's all about wearing your derby hat at the event. I got to keep it on because it was a derby day, and I bought a matching one for Darby
That's
in green.
So, cute.
So we got to watch the Kentucky Derby together at a friend's house in the neighborhood, which was also fabulous.
Yeah.
So I wore my derby hat all day long from about 8 a.m. Until 8 at night.
You might as well.
Yeah, it was really, really a great weekend. I think across the board, it was a big weekend, was it not?
It was. It was a very busy weekend. Yeah,
so
a lot of people out and about.
A lot of people out and about, so I'm sure a lot of wins today.
Yeah.
All right, well, up next, our QCL Book Club. We finished off a murder mystery in April, so what will we be reading this month? Join us as we make our pick for May after the break.
You're watching Quad Cities Live.
It is time now for our monthly meeting of the QCL Book Club, a partnership with the Davenport Public Library. And joining me, as always, is Brittany Peacock. Brittany, welcome back.
I'm glad to be here.
Yes, I like your cute shorter hair.
Thank you. I like yours.
Thank you. So we just finished our book for April, which obviously, if you've been sticking with us through our book club, you know was right up my alley from the start. It was this one here, Someone We Know by Sherry LaPena. So what did you think?
I really liked it.
I did too. Oh, I was curious to see what you would think because it's not necessarily your favorite genre, but I have to say, I kind of knew, like we said, we're not going to give it all away, but it's kind of like a whodunit type of situation.
Yes, absolutely.
With a lot of different players in it. And I thought I knew who it was in the end, but then she twists.
Yes.
She gets you.
Oh my gosh. All of her books are. Hers are always so twisty. And which I love.
Yes.
I don't want to guess the ending.
No, I don't like to guess the ending. I could have sworn, and it was just a little bit different than what I really thought. So for anybody who still wants to read this book, you definitely should.
Absolutely.
Giving people, I guess, a little bit of background on it, it's basically based on a neighborhood of people.
Yes.
And they're trying to figure out how somebody was murdered or killed.
What led up to the murder?
Yeah,
there's a teenage boy that's meddling and breaking into houses, so that element was there.
Yeah, and a lot of different family dynamics, which I think people find interesting to read.
Yes.
So we want to get to our options for May.
Yes.
Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month in May. So Vera Wang's Unsolicited Advice for Murders by Jesse Q. Sutano. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Mm-hmm. And then Mystery Month is this month. So The Woman in the Library. That was another option. Brother and Sister Day, which was just last week?
Yeah.
Woman of Light. You're going to have to read the author name on that one.
Oh, yes. I am so sorry. Kaylee Farhado Enstein.
Well, you did a great job. And then National Teachers Day, which this is Teacher Appreciation Week. National Teachers Day is officially tomorrow.
Yes.
And the book for that, Watching You by Lisa Jewell, which is right here on the end. So should we drum roll?
Yes.
One that we picked, Watching You by Lisa Jewell, honor of Teacher Appreciation Month, which, you know what, we might find this a little, it does have something to do
it's
with it.
It's loosely related.
Loosely related to teaching, because I think it's actually, there's going to be a little murder in this one as well, which we're fine with.
Exactly.
So I have started reading it. I'm not very far into it. So far, so good. Kind of tell people a little bit about what to expect with this
book. So another psychological thriller.
Yeah.
How we like to get into those.
Yeah.
So basically, it's kind of centered around this new headmaster. He's become somewhat popular with one of the mothers. There's a lot of secrets going on.
Yeah.
This area is like a very idyllic,
wealthy,
safe, wealthy community, but everybody's always watching, so.
Yeah, this sounds like it's gonna be a good one, and there are some great characters already being developed, and only in the first couple of chapters. Okay, so we hope everybody reads along with us for that, and we'll tell you more ways that you can do that before we finish up the segment.
Absolutely.
But let's talk about some cool things happening at the Davenport Public Library. Teen Anime Club.
Yes, so this is for anybody ages 11 through 19 who might be interested in teen or in anime. or is maybe interested in trying to learn more about it. So that's the first and third Wednesday in May at Fairmont at 6 p.m. Have snacks.
Snacks, have fun, and learn a thing or two. This next one, a little bit more for the younger kiddos. Yes. World Turtle Day Storytime and Craft. So this is going to be on May 18th, so coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yep. This is really for ages 4 to 7. Have a story time and enjoy a little craft.
Yeah, for World Turtle Day, which we know the kiddos, they just love them at that age. And then this is very cool. So there's a book reading and discussion with a local author for this month, for AAPI month.
Absolutely. So she's a local author. She was born in China, and she has written a book, and she's going to come share it with us at our Eastern Avenue location.
Yeah. It's just special to be able to meet somebody that's doing something cool that you may not have known about,
I know.
Of course, you like to finish us off with some children's books, and you guys have a theme for this month.
Yes. It was a suggestion by one of my young readers, so Miss Brittany delivered. So we have our shark books. So this is one of our newer ones, a unicorn and a dinosaur and a shark walk into a book.
Oh, cute.
Very funny. We have Una and the shark. Shark is very shy. Una's an inventor, and she...
Very cute storyline, and it looks like the art is beautiful in that one.
Stunning. That's part of the reason why I chose it. And then we have, the beloved baby shark over here. And then we have Twinkle Twinkle Little Shark for the littler ones.
For the little kids. Yeah, some really great options, and I just have to reiterate, we love when you do that because it kind of points you in the right directions. There are so many children's books. When you walk into the library with your kiddo, it can be a little overwhelming. So this is just kind of a space where you can learn a little bit more about what you're recommending. And we want to, of course, remind people to, again, read along with us, watching you. Join the QCL Book Club. We now have a page on our website dedicated to the book club. Just head to kwqc.com and click on the tab for Quad Cities Live. And then at the top, you're going to find a link to the QCL Book Club. We've got a Goodreads page. You can read reviews and all of that. Brittany, thank you again for joining us. And we will see you next month and discuss what we thought about
the
book.
I'm so excited.
Thank you. Well, after the break, survival swim lessons are now available in our area, teaching children life-saving techniques in the water. We'll sit down with a certified instructor next.
You're watching Quad Cities Live.
Swimming season is really right around the corner, and if you have young children at home, pools can be a source of stress.
Yeah, that's where Infant Swimming Resource, or ISR, comes in. Caitlin Gustafson, rather, is a certified ISR instructor, if I can talk today. It's a Monday. She joins us now. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Yes, it's nice to be here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, talk a little bit about what makes this different from other swimming lessons.
So ISR really focuses on the survival aspect of swimming, like making sure that children are competent and able to perform like completely independent from an adult. So we start as young as 6 months old and go 7-plus-ish range. Okay. And so like the pre-walkers are like a rollback to float until like help could arrive or something. And then walking and up, we try to do like swim, float, swimming.
Look at that.
Yeah, we're showing video as you're talking because it's a perfect time to explain when you say roll back and float.
That's exactly
what that little baby just did.
Yes.
It's amazing.
She's 8 months old, I think.
Wow.
Gosh.
And we're going to get a look at a couple more videos here coming up. But first, give us your background. How did you become an ISR instructor? I mean, we were just talking before this segment, and I mean, you're fairly new at this.
Yeah, it was pure chance. Small world, somebody I used to work with's cousin got certified and was traveling up here to teach family, and I got my son in her traveling lesson, and within his first like second or third week of it, I was sold. I was done. Like, I just knew that the fire was lit, the passion was lit, and that's what I was gonna do.
Because it's terrifying as a parent.
Oh, it is. Oh, it is. My son was only 9 months old when I started, and so my anxiety was, like 12 out of 10. But at the same time, every single day, I told myself, like, if he needs this skill, he needs it. And it could happen to anybody. I didn't want it to happen to me,
And you know what? I didn't even mean terrifying as a parent to watch ISR. I just meant generally to watch your kid hang out by a pool.
Yeah.
And
well,
being terrified to know, like, what happens if I just turn my back for 1 second.
Right.
Well, and, I told my husband, I was like, how long does it take you to use the bathroom? You know, if you're at a pool party, you're on a boat, you're out and about, there's lakes, creeks, ponds, we have the Mississippi, like there's water literally everywhere.
Yeah.
And it does take seconds.
It's an important skill. Well, we're gonna, we're actually gonna watch a couple of videos, but first, you provided some videos for us. We've seen a couple of them on the screen of kids you've worked with. This first one is Briley. So we're gonna watch that quickly and then you can kind of describe the instruction there.
Yes.
I'm like so proud of watching Briley.
So we don't do clothing until the very end of lessons. So the children learn in their swimsuit, swim diaper, until the very end when they're like fully skilled. But we do practice in clothes at the end of lessons because majority of water accidents with children happen in normal clothes.
Sure.
It's not during a swim time. It's after or before, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's such an important part of it too, because after all, like, you kind of want to give them all scenarios. And I think that that could be so shocking for a kid if they're not expecting to fall in the water. So it's kind of like that feeling, you know.
Well, and it's a totally different sensation to go in nothing but a swimsuit. And then imagine if you were to climb in all of your clothes.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to feel it
very weighty
everywhere.
Down.
And it's going to be really heavy.
You know, you mentioned to us that you started your son in ISR at 9 months old. But I mean, some parents, they do this right off the bat, you know, when their children are infants. So how does the age make a difference?
So 6 months is like our general rule of thumb. They have to meet a physical milestone, and that's be able to sit up independently to begin.
Sure.
That's
that
to make sure that they're ready, you know, for the rotation and everything to get face up.
Mm-hmm.
I think age-wise really depends on everybody's circumstances. It's never too young if you have a pool in your backyard, a retention pond, creeks, babysitter has something, you're on the boat. I mean, water is unfortunately everywhere, and I love water. I grew up loving water. But the thing is children need to know that it's not always fun.
Right. Yes.
It can be so much fun when they have skills.
Yeah. Well, speaking of differences in age, we want to look at one more video. This is Calvin's instruction. I'm a big Cal fan. a great family. But we want to take a look at Cal. I absolutely love this video.
He's so cute.
He did great, he's doing like back, like roll back, going back under, like all of that.
Yeah.
He's a little bit older than Briley. Does that make a difference at all when it comes
does.
To teaching them?
It does. So I want to say Briley was right around the 18-month mark when she started, and in full clothes, I don't even expect like Calvin's age to swim, float, swim. Like they're not going to get very far with all of that weight. But he's obviously old enough that he is swim, float, swimming.
So
he's having a blast, and we're able to get him from one end of the pool to the other without any help.
A couple things people should know before we run out of time with you today, Caitlin, is that these lessons are weeks long, but the lessons themselves are very short.
Yes.
10 minutes, correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yes, they're 10 minutes long. It's kind of an attention span thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot of things. We want to end the lesson on a really good note, like them doing amazing, so before they get tired, fatigued, and then also...
Yes. Well, we have the information on the screen there for people that want to contact you. It is quadcitiesisr.com. Also has a Facebook page.
Yes.
Caitlin, thank you so much for being here today.
And thank you so much for watching.
Have a great day.